really cool.
Hello, bonjour, welcome to Rosbif Rugby, your one-stop shop for all things French rugby, the top 14, Pro League de National, the brilliant town, cities, fans, bars, food and everything in between, with a little bit of an Anglo-Rosbiffy angle. The eagle-eyed and eared among you will notice that I'm back from my exile. There is no Welsh tones over the tannoy this afternoon. And opposite me, with a new pin badge on his resplendent beret, is Rob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Glad to have you back, Richard, to be honest. It means it's been a tough couple of weeks, you know, having to sit down with Reese, who is kind of blagging it. The regional accent as well was quite tough to deal with at times. You know, there was a lot more editing of the podcast I had to do, you know, editing out where he's called Penno Pernard, or you know, he's called he's got the names completely wrong of players, or Pro Deter was kind of kept coming out of his mouth quite a bit. And he, you know, he was just talking far too much. So it's nice to have someone that's, you know, knows what they're talking about and is happy to keep it all concise. Gives me less editing after this.
Very kind. I did just do the classic Franglais Pro Deer rather than Deja.
I haven't decided what's okay, because we go top 14 rather than top 14. So
that is true. How have you been? Maybe first place to start. As I say, you have a new pin on your Aviron Bayonnaise beret.
Yeah. So since our trip to January, or since the kind of launch of Rosbeefs properly, I've been trying to collect a pin badge at each ground I've been to, and I've added a Union Bordeaux Bagler pin badge, and I'm wearing a UBB jumper, which is testament to the marketing power of Maxime Luku, if nothing else, because I saw him wearing it on the online shop and I felt I need that jumper. But yeah, I was in Bordeaux over the weekend, which was very unmentioned in last week's. Some of you may have thought the shoehorning in of a message from Bill from London was a bit odd. That was a pseudonym for a friend of mine called Ben, who was also going on a stag do that I organised to Bordeaux. Stick to what you know.
Are you familiar with The Simpsons, Rob?
I know where you're going with this, Richard, but yes.
Do you? Familiar with an episode in, I think it's genuinely one of the first episodes where for Marge's birthday, Homer buys her a bowling ball with Homer written on it. it would be remiss not to say there are some parallels when you're entrusted with a stag do for one of your mates. And you managed to somehow squeeze in a trip to Bordeaux. How did it come about?
So I asked him what he wanted, and he said, you know, maybe like a beer festival or like a food festival. And then like a slight delay, he's like, or like one of your rugby trips to France. And I was like, right, well, I don't need any more.
Like one of your rugby trips.
And I thought I didn't need any more invitation. But so I had a few options lined up. It was a relatively small group of us. I did give everyone an option of dates and a couple of beer festivals, maybe, that we could do in some other amazing cities across Europe, not France. And ultimately, Bordeaux was the winner. I knew what I was doing in terms of, I knew I could do it cheaply. I think that's the thing. That was one of the clinchers, is I knew that I could kind of keep costs relatively low once the flights were out of the way, because the flights were kind of fluctuating quite a bit. But part of that keeping it low was the gamble of all gambles, that Bordeaux would beat Saracens in the previous weekend to set up a quarterfinal at home this weekend. So because the kind of the flights had already kind of had that jump up from presumably some Saracens fans purchasing tickets on the last 16 weekend, and there was a gamble involved to kind of get some slightly cheaper tickets, and also that date worked a bit better for everyone, to get more people on the stag do. But safe to say, when I wasn't able to watch the game the week before the Bordeaux Saracens one, I kind of confidently predicted when I booked the flights that, oh, last time they played, they put 50 points on them and they should comfortably do it again against Saracens. And then as Saracens were demolishing Harlequins a couple of weeks before, it was kind of starting to get very twitchy about kind of, oh God, maybe this is going to be closer than I thought, and Bordeaux might not win at home against Saracens, and therefore I might be stranded for ideas. But the backup, also the benefit of Bordeaux, is if there's not a game, my kind of thinking was, if there's not a game, we're not going to be short of ideas because it's a phenomenal place. I've been to Bordeaux now 5 or 6 times, I think, and I've still not been to Saint-Emilion, so that was kind of the fallback option as well. But
There
yeah,
is surely
it
a
was.
bit of an irony in that you managed to without I don't know, I think I know one of the other people on the stag do, but you managed to arrange the stag do to Bordeaux the same weekend as an influx of Southwest Londoners at the same time, which I would hazard a guess is probably not a million miles off the group you're in.
Actually, I think, yeah, I know what you're getting at. Certainly there's a demographically there's some crossovers with some of the Harlequins fans, but that was kind of a selling point from my perspective. It's like, well, if there is a game, it's going to be Glasgow, so it'll be a large portion of the Scotland team, or it'll be Harlequins and we will know some of the players, and actually one of the guys, despite being a Northerner, is somehow a Harlequins fan, so that worked out pretty well. And luckily, we managed to avoid quite a lot of Harlequins fans. And the one downside was actually that people heard our accents and assumed we were Harlequins fans, which is obviously a horrible accusation to be levelled at you.
Well, you say that, and this is probably a good place to start. Some of those Harlequins fans were understandably pretty happy. I did see I don't know if you're aware of the Harlequins podcast. I actually think we very briefly met the one of the guys who does it when we went to Montpellier a few years ago. Although that might be my concussion the day afterwards making that up. But there was quite a good photo of them who they'd done a real smash and grab, and I think slept in Bordeaux Airport on the Saturday night, looking like
Oh,
genuine corpses, and understandably so.
well, understandably so, Richard, because I talked about some of the luck involved in this trip and the indefinable amount of luck really struck with my 15 euro tickets, which I booked because they were going to be near the Bordeaux supporters, and I wanted to be in the mixture of the atmosphere. But and you thought, 15 euros, that's pretty good for right in the mixer of the atmosphere, but thankfully that also was in the shade, which
Oh,
if
very good.
you the Harlequins fans were not in the shade, and it was boiling. Like, I cannot stress to you how hot it was. It looked hot on TV, and but like the kind of heat shimmering off the grass, like as you're looking out over the pitch. So not only did they witness a fantastic win, but imagine there was some pretty aggressive dehydration going on.
Some rare topside roast beef knocking about
Yeah,
from the Quins boys.
very
Let's
much so.
get into it then. We had you on the ground there. I saw
You
most
go
of
for it, because
this.
I could talk about this for ages. So you
Well,
go for it.
I saw most of this, albeit on my phone in Madrid Airport. So you're probably slightly more qualified to talk about it. I saw the first 10 minutes. Quins came out of the blocks. I suppose just as a preamble, and probably most people listening will know this. I think, understandably, neither of us or many people gave Quins much of a shot given
No.
the performances of Bordeaux beforehand. And also,
Quinzone is great through against Glasgow as well. Like
yeah,
Johnny Beattie didn't barely
correct.
even bother. He was like, I'm not gonna, it's done. It's basically Bordeaux to lose semi-final. And that's kind of what he was saying. So, far more qualified people than us.
And Quinn's came flying out the blocks. The one thing we would say is that I know my voice note didn't make it last week. I feel there was, I think you probably reflect this a little bit on the on last week's podcast with Reese, but there's just the tiniest glimmer for Quinn's, which was their big performances in the last 3 or 4 years with that team that won the Premiership have been these open, high scoring affairs. And yeah, it really was a minute window, but I mean, fair play. Like it's a
Yeah,
proper win
well,
for the ages, isn't it?
I said on the previews I put out on the socials, the kind of very quick previews, I said this game isn't actually all about the running rugby. I don't think it will be. I think it's going to be won and lost up front and with Bordeaux's defence. But actually, I guess it kind of was won that way by Quins, but it was also won in the Quins style of them just flinging it about and their intent and their pace that they played with was and they came far, they really did come firing out the blocks. It was a hell of a start, and it did kind of very briefly silence the crowd. What did you have any other kind of particular views? I'm
Well,
sorry, I've cut you too
so
off earlier.
no, so I guess for anyone who didn't see all of it, Quinn's come racing out the blocks, start to get a bit of a nudge on at scrum time towards the end of the first half, and ultimately go in, was it 16 points up? And were probably, I think, pretty good
28,
value
12,
for it.
yeah.
Second half, you know there's going to be a response, and Bordeaux, come back really strongly, a couple of lovely tries. The one was it Biel Barret off the Buros quick line out,
Yeah.
and you just kind of think the momentum has turned, and Quinn's managed to, well, they actually had one disallowed, didn't they? Riley dropped it over the line at the back of the
Yeah.
rolling maul, but they just managed to arrest the momentum when it had completely gone away from them. And I think I know we tend to look at the French teams, understandably, in these discussions. But I think one of the things, there was a lot of talk and commentary about how Quins have faded in second halves recently, and things like that. Obviously, they got spanked by Saracens, but how it's happened in some of their wins, Bath, Glasgow the other week. But they have tended to win those games, and you felt that their number was up here. And poor old, I don't know if those jumpers were half price after the game, Rob, but our man Maxime, what's he done at the end?
Well, I think so. Just on like the on Quins generally, I think the feeling I had was they're just like Bordeaux are just gonna come back at some point. They're just gonna run away with it at some point, much like I guess Toulouse did on the Sunday game. But they didn't quite kind of they never Harlequins just kept punching back. There were these kind of mini kind of comebacks from Bordeaux, and then Quins would score straight after it. So that kind of onslaught that was coming was kept being nipped in the bud by Quins, and it felt like a little bit of a smash and grab in a way. But there was, and also the heat was. I think I was texting one of our WhatsApp groups, where it's just this is going to get them at some point. They're just not going to be used to this heat. But actually, it looked kind of more like some of the big boys, particularly Big Ben in that Ubé Bay pack, were the ones struggling with the heat, rather than the likes of Finn Baxter or Will Collier, or certainly Will Evans didn't look like he was struggling at all.
No, I thought Bordeaux actually in the back line, like it fired, didn't it? Like it properly fired. First half, Garcia had a bit of a had a little bit of a mare, didn't he? He throws the pass to Deportier when he's in, and it's kind of just mistimed it, and then gets caught on the just
Your
inside, I think,
yellow
the
card,
Quinn's half. This is after the yellow card where the ball breaks off the high ball, and you think, the last week that probably goes wide, and Biel Barret's in somewhere, and That said, second half they brought on, is it Lescor get nine and
The scores, yeah.
Luku up
Shifted
to
Luka to
10,
10.
and they started to look really good.
I mean, Luka was basically playing nine and 10 at various points. I think that really illustrated what the thing being in the ground really illustrated to me just how he is for that team. And for all that he slightly flopped his big audition for the France backup jersey, he is so integral for that Ubé Bay side. And they absolutely love him there. And he loves them. Like he's the one revving up the crowd. He felt so talismanic for them. I thought he played really well at 10. His goal kicking isn't fantastic. Where we were, so we were kind of right in that corner. So where Tambuy scored the final try was right in front of us.
Which was a brilliant try, the little inside to out. It was
Couple
so
of lads in
good.
front of us were very hyped about Tambuy coming on, and we were loving it with them. But I thought he got it, and then the flags obviously don't go up, and it was like, oh, okay. I mean, they completely fluffed the kickoff as well, but they were a bit sloppy. I think on in terms of the back line, like Louis Diabaré was the clear threat. And they just couldn't quite get him in enough space. And it felt like as soon as they did get him in space, he was going to let rip. I guess the one thing that we haven't spoken about is the injuries and how that's impacted the game. Because I think I said, responding to Bill from London, i.e., my mate Ben, that the key matchup was going to be, can Mahler stop Ben Tamifuna? But Mahler then didn't play. And Finn Baxter was absolutely brilliant. Will Porter was, I think I had a little dig at
He was
Quinton's
phenomenal.
reserves nine last week, which would have been Max Green, but Will Porter was brilliant. Whereas, so I guess Garcia, as you said, didn't have his best day out. I think it was quite touch unfair that he got hooked at half time, but no Penno. Like, I think that at times in that first half, Bordeaux was struggling to get penetration or kind of break it up a little bit and get that kind of slightly more broken defense that they would have been looking for, so they could unleash the likes of Depoltaire or Diabaré. And you just think that if you can get the ball to Penno in at some point in that first half, he's going to do something, and it could break the game open, and it could have been really different. And obviously, they did miss Jalibert's goal kicking, a bit of his composure like towards the line, and his kicking from hand. I thought Buros was great. Kicking from hand and just under the high ball. But I think Quins did better on that. Amazingly, I still can't quite get my head around this, how Ubé Bay lost. But I think a couple of key injuries, and they're pretty similar caliber in terms of importance to those sides, Kerr and Mahler versus Jalibert and Penno. Jalibert was
Well,
pretty close. I think it was touch and go on, like, I think they made the call on Friday morning, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's back this weekend. He was pretty, and he was running the drinks,
yeah, they were. I mean, I think ultimately, I'd say I saw most of it. I've watched a little bit of it back. I think you kind of have to be a little bit hats off to Harlequins, really. Like it's an amazing performance to pull out. As you say, the fact that they kept finding a way back in when the momentum was against them, and you said that it's something we hear quite a lot. The game's going to be won up front, but it kind of was, and it was basically won up front
They had
by
them. They fully
Harlequins,
had
wasn't
them.
it?
They really had them. I think, like, watching it back today, I didn't quite realize just how many scrum penalties Harlequins had won. Like, I did think, like, oh, the scrum is taking the momentum out of anything Bordeaux try and do. But it really, like, it was one-sided.
And we've also seen, we've discussed it quite a bit. Bordeaux, our first phase, have been absolutely lethal, haven't they? Like the number of tries they scored in the last month or so that have been directly off the back of the scrum, off the kind of tail of the line out. And I mean, Finn Baxter was brilliant. I thought, he's obviously kind of the new man, isn't he? But Will Collier was monstrous off the casts, obviously, as well, which is, I think they'll enjoy him there. But there was one scrum. I think it's actually not long before the final try in the first half, which takes them out to a 16-point lead. Where so I think back to the beforehand gets the nudge on Tamifuna. Big Ben tries to sort of buy like a reset, goes up. Ref isn't having it. Next scrum, Collier has I can't remember what's his name, the Bordeaux loose head,
Kvaratskhelia,
the
who was awful.
Kvaratskhelia
So Poirot
has.
was another one that didn't play, and I think they really missed him as well because they didn't.
Yeah.
Poirot was brilliant at the breakdown, and they got completely, largely done until Guido Petty came on. They would didn't have
He was
any
very
impact at the
good, Petty.
breakdown, which
And
that and
yeah.
Poirot was
And
brilliant over the ball, and they could have done with him and a bit of experience. I thought Kvaratskhelia ball carrying was poor as well. Like, yeah,
yeah,
that
they
was actually a bit of a
struggled.
14-point swing that, because that comes from the.
They're pretty
When
much under the post,
Depoter
yeah.
knocks it on, yeah, and then they win a penalty off their own 5 meter line scrum, piggyback off that, get another scrum penalty, and then they're in the corner and they score the try that gives them that buffer at half time. Yeah, I thought it was yeah, fair play to Quins. I would say the final thing on that and the trip generally is the Bordeaux. I was kind of going to the game saying, you know. Telling people about Rosbifs and saying that, you know, Stade Chaban-Delmas is one of our favourite stadiums. And I think it really solidified that. It's a stunning stadium. Like, it's 100-year anniversary this year. That Art Deco design.
Well, isn't Dmitry
It's
Yashvili
not.
playing in a football match there? Didn't we
Yeah,
find out?
against Zinedine Zidane. Yeah. But I did, like, we were properly bunched in tight. The atmosphere, but the fans were so good and the singing all game. Like, and the guys, we had guys there that, you know, weren't necessarily huge rugby fans or like were going to certainly French rugby for the first time. And they were just looking around, kind of, this is incredible. This is unreal. And the Bodega afterwards, despite the defeat, was kicking off. I'll be
Very
honest,
good.
memory's a bit hazy at that point. Dehydration levels were high.
All the Santa Million and Factor 50 will have hit by that point.
Yeah, exactly. But phenomenal. I mean, I think we left the ground about 8 p.m. So that was a steady 2 or 3 hours in the bodega afterwards.
Decent clip. I suppose the last thing I'll say on this, which is potentially blindingly obvious. But I do think Bordeaux are going to be really sick about this one. I think some of the commentary afterwards, which is completely fair, is that a lot of these teams, if Bordeaux were jumping way ahead, but if Bordeaux were have got to have got to the final, it would have been their first final. It would have been their first win if they'd gone that far. And a lot of the commentary afterwards was around how a lot of these teams really have to sort of earn their game tape, and it's that sort of hurt that pushes them forward. And there is definitely a kind of trail of that, I guess, through the Champions Cup winners. I think the fact that they were within a kickable slash very kickable kick of overcoming a slightly tepid performance with arguably their two most dangerous players to come back, to then play a team that they've beaten already this season. I know we're talking about a lot of what ifs here, but you look, even last year, La Rochelle just scraped past Gloucester on their way to winning the tournament. And sometimes they're the sorts of games that you can learn from, and you want to learn from into the next round rather than next year. And I think that will linger over them for quite some time. I hope it doesn't. I don't think it will, but I hope it doesn't derail anything in their top 14 push. But yeah, what a game.
Well, they'll certainly be rallied on by a handful of new die-hard Ubé Bay fans. From the UK. Yeah, there's a few quite a lot of stash being bought yesterday.
Excellent.
People
Always good.
dying to have some represent their newfound team.
Very good. We've done on Bordeaux, Mr. Bordeaux, with the
I mean,
Ubé Bay tracksuit top.
could have gone for hours on that, but yeah, I'll keep it to that. Hell of a game. Hell of a game.
Shall we then go to some more French involvement in Ireland and
Well, if
Leinster,
were they involved?
were they involved? Were they involved? I would say I think some of my predictions have been miles off in recent times, but I did think
Well, namely
Leinster were going to pace
the Ubay Bay
them.
Quinns one, we both got very badly wrong. But yeah,
Yeah,
you did
I
call
didn't
it.
see this as particularly close. I was every sinew in me was straining for it to be a close one, but I didn't see all of it. What I did see didn't look great, and from a La Rochelle perspective,
Yeah, they weren't really ever in it. It felt pretty even for the first 15, 20 minutes, but it's one of those ones that as soon as the lead kind of develops, you think actually they weren't really in it at the start. They were kind of clinging on. And it kind of became one-way traffic. They did score a try at the end of the first half, which was that just came out of nowhere, and it was kind of test that was kind of that they're obviously hyping it up as like that's champion qualities, like to score with the clock in the red in the first half. And is the comeback on again against this Leinster team? Are the frailties going to show? But La Rochelle just looked knackered, to be honest. They were not really at the races, I didn't think. Hastoy just looks a shadow of what he was 12 months ago, I have to say. And they missed Doolan at the back. I think they could have done with him just to kind of hoof it downfield and get them in the right, because they couldn't really get out of their half at times. And he's vital for that. Caballo went off injured. Nick's kind of for what just in the lead up to one of the tries just after half time. And it felt at that point when Hastoy gets bumped by Ryan Baird and it's, Caballo's down for a long time, it's like, okay, well, they've scored four tries, and that does feel like the kind of beginning of the end to this game. I think they looked knackered. It felt quite like a lot of the players and what we expect from them, we just weren't quite getting. Like we expect, Bottier was trying his best, but we don't see as much of him ball in hand anymore. And Aldrit was trying his best, but he didn't have nearly the impact that he had last week. Or Skelton and Antonio would have one or two carries each. I think they really miss Borgre, actually, like more than
The real
teams
talent
should
there, isn't
miss.
it?
Yeah, because it's another man at the breakdown. It felt like they weren't attacking the breakdown as much. He carries so well. And Tolulolu is obviously an international hooker, but I think Borgre is the heartbeat of that team alongside Aldrit. And I think they're just not quite there. I don't quite know what it is. It's hard to put into words, but it definitely looked like the travel, because they've had a lot of travel to go to South Africa and back in the space of 10 days is gonna, or in the space of a week, is gonna take it out of you. And it looked like they were flagging, and Leinster were primed.
I think we've probably, I feel like most or a lot of rugby fans, maybe not Leinster fans, have a bit of a soft spot for La Rochelle. I think,
Yeah.
they're a phenomenal club. Like, they are the absolute embodiment of sort of French rugby and town connection and all of those things. They've kind of struggled all year, right? They've been a little bit off the pace. They're looking a little bit, I don't know, maybe this season was
Are
always
they
going to be
over
a
the
tricky
hill?
one, but it does look and feel a little bit that way. You look at, they've still obviously got some of those players from, well, a fair chunk of the players that kind of won the tournament last year, but Sitenni and Donti in the centres at points last year looked like pretty much the perfect centre combination, and they just haven't been there. Donty, I find
I think
almost a bit
Sutton still looks
baffling.
sharp, but like the breakdown thing, like don't how many breakdown penalties would Donty have been winning at this point? You made during the Six Nations, he would have been winning loads. He's done nothing over the last couple of weeks
He's really
in that
struggled. He's
area.
look, he's really he's struggled. You won't find many bigger Jack Noll fans than me, but I mean, he hasn't been in their starting 23 at points. He wasn't supposed to
He
play
was
the
injured.
Stormers, and well, he wasn't supposed to play in the game against the Stormers, and Teddy Tonga dropped
Oh.
out late. And it doesn't quite, it's sort of player that when he's lacking a bit of sharpness, doesn't it looks it. And then there's some slightly more obvious things to explain. They're missing an entire international front row in Wardy, Bourgarit, and Colombe, which is a pretty steady task when you're going up against, well, if there was a Lions team picked tomorrow, you would assume probably the starting Lions front row of Porter, Sheehan, and Furlong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was always, I think this was always a much bigger, you know, a much bigger test than perhaps the brilliant storylines of recent contests between the two sides was going to, or had suggested. But yeah, it was a little bit disappointing to see them go down by quite a margin.
I think the thing I was thinking towards the end of it is to win three Champions Cups in a row would be phenomenal. Like, to go back to back is incredible enough. And they, you know, there was a lot of stuff last year with Ronan O'Gara, with the mentality of, you know, we're building a dynasty and we are going to go back to back. But I think this year, the emotional toll of the World Cup exit for some of those guys, not just the French one, but I'd say probably Will Skelton's World Cup exit is probably a bit of an emotional toll as well. To also find some reserves to pluck up some strength to go three in a row, and with some of the injuries that they've had, I wonder whether they are either over the hill and that's them, you know, this team will now fade, or it's just they'll be back next year and this year was just a bit too much to go back to back to back. And with the down year and then they refresh and they reset at the start of the season, next year they could be fierce.
They've re-signed, they've fixed a lot of those guys to longer contracts, which is interesting.
Long contracts as well, like 6 year sort of thing.
Really long contracts. And it'll be interesting to see if how that plays out. I mean, without drawing too many parallels, we've seen, they may well go on and win the Premiership, but we've seen that was kind of Saracen's approach and it hasn't thus far worked. Albeit there's probably a little bit more strength in depth in La Rochelle, given the nature of the salary cap and squads and all of those kind of things. But yeah, I mean, any other thoughts on that one? Pretty convincing.
Pretty convincing for Leinster. Quite cool they're playing the game at Croke Park. I think that's cool.
Yeah. I must admit.
Not the Aviva, their annual 3-month residency at the Aviva. Nice to change up a bit.
I must say, I was looking at the Croke Park is somewhere I've always wanted to go to. And I was looking at some options, but I think it might be a bit of a stretch. Okay, just a very quick one, non-French rugby related. In the last 3 hours, have you seen who's signed for Leinster next season?
Yeah, Geordie Barrett.
Geordie Barrett. Just in case there wasn't quite enough strength and depth and quality across that back line.
Does that mean they're getting rid of Charlie Naughtie?
You assume so. I think they have to, don't they? Based on the
the international rule sort of thing.
Yeah. But I think it's only for 6 months, but it's at the sharp end of the season as well. So
handy.
Yeah, I must say I don't know enough about the structures of Irish rugby to pass too much comment, but the way some of the other teams are going and Snyman getting snared for months there, having played about 11 minutes in 7 years or whatever it is, I can understand some of the ill feeling towards Leinster from certain parts of the sort of Irish rugby fandom. There was some. Don't know if you saw a couple of lads in Munster shirts and La Rochelle scarves at the weekend. Apparently, there were quite a few there.
Yeah, I did see a few of that. I actually looked up the population size of Dublin and Belfast, and let's just say the Leinstermen are overrepresented in the Irish national team in terms of pure population. But yeah,
there we go.
Right, talking about the non-South African stuff, other French stuff, and shambolic international administration. Bulls.
Let's not dwell too long.
We're not even going to talk about them.
We'll give it 2 minutes. It did happen. It's just a shame. Like I do understand the logistical issues and all that kind of thing. But
La Rochelle managed it.
La Rochelle managed it. It's the quarterfinals as well, and I think actually, you can drive yourself slightly mad looking at hot takes in various press and social media and things like this. But actually, I found myself getting unreasonably irate at some of the South African media's defense of this. I think I can understand why they've done it. I think you'd have to be thick not to understand like part of the reasoning, but I also think you have to be incredibly dull or willfully stupid to, see it as anything other than just a bit of a kind of, middle finger up at the competition. Like, Saints are a great side at the moment. They're playing some amazing rugby. Like, genuinely look phenomenal going forward. So it's always going to be difficult, but it's Northampton Saints. It's not Leinster away. It's not Toulouse away. You've got like this firepower in that Bulls team. If they brought it out, is phenomenal. And it could have been quite something, and it wasn't. And
Well, I think it was 13 changes, 11 of which were Springboks. So that's still 11 Springboks. Like, regardless of who they are, it's 11 international players that are just, you'd like to think, could do some
sat at
damage in any
home
European game.
watching. And I just I don't know, it's frustrating. It needs to be, and it's not just on the more you look at it, there are some real farcical elements to the Champions Cup. Like, the turnaround between the last 16 and quarter final is pretty naff, isn't it, if we're being honest? But yeah, this felt really disappointing. I did actually watch, well, the first half they were only 6 points down, but they were never really in it. They were incredibly physical and, brave and enthusiastic. Akker van der Merwe, who I'd forgotten about from his time at Sale, Doohan's better looking brother, he's an absolute legend. Like, he was everywhere.
Can he hit a line out yet, or does he still struggle with that?
I wasn't watching. He was too busy like grubber kicking and like nailing people. But the Bulls get an intercept before half time that makes it a sort of, full 14-point swing. And the atmosphere at Franklin's Gardens was, well, I wasn't there, but on telly it was kind of good, but it didn't have that sort of visceral intensity that it would have been if they'd gone full noise. So yeah, real shame. Northampton playing some wicked rugby. You'd think Leinster will be a bit of a stretch, but going forward
In Croke Park as
they
well,
look pretty sexy. So fair play to them. Still got to do the job, and yeah, deposited them
I
pretty
enjoyed
roundly.
the reporting I saw, which I think I put up on our Instagram story, which was listing out the Bulls players that had injured, and he's got a slight niggle, and then so and so, so and so, and so and so have also not made the flight. It's kind of like grouping them together with some of the injured players. It's like, no, you've just said to Willie LaRue, you stay at home, pal, you're all right. Like, Willie LaRue or like Kane and Moody were not injured, like, but they tried to kind of paint it as injuries, and it's like, no, this is a, especially when he kicked up the fuss, like almost from ball one as soon as they'd beaten Leon, Jake White was kind of shots fired.
And it's whatever anyone says, it's not comparable with what, some of the French teams have done in the group stages. Stormers last year went full noise to Sandy Park, and lost, but I don't know. It's frustrating. Anyway, we've got one more to do. We'll maybe do it after this quick interlude. Final quarterfinal, brilliant from a French perspective. Less good with my Exeter Chiefs hat on. Did you catch any of Toulouse versus Exeter, or were you too busy supping wine in the French sun?
I was very much enjoying a couple of wine bars in Bordeaux, a couple of new ones that I've discovered. So that's good and good for future recommendations. We had some delicious wine. I was following the game, but I've watched some of it this afternoon on my day off. But I think you were probably a fairly vested interest. I've only watched up to the point where Toulouse Some things haven't started to run away with it yet in my world. But so I think Chiefs were pretty good, but to lose, I assume it was kind of a much like the Quins Bordeaux game, they were kind of staying in the game, staying in the fight, but where we thought that one of the French team might run away with it, in this case it did happen.
Yeah, and I mean, there's running away with it, and there is hurtling off into the distance, leaving a trail of dust behind you. First half was really good. First half was competitive. Exeter were, I think, what was impressive actually was it from a, and I'm not entirely objective in my view here, but it wasn't just they kind of hung in it. They actually dictated decent patches of play. Yeah, they looked pretty good going forward. I thought Tom Cairns at nine was brilliant in the first half, actually. He was really lively. They just looked kind of good across the board. Couldn't maybe get Faye Wabosso on it as much as they'd have liked. Did have one lovely little sort of breakaway near the end of the first half. And yeah, they were fully, you know, the scoreline at half time was completely fair. I mean, to lose it, the 23 is pretty frightening when you look at it. When you bring
I
off.
think the only flaw that they currently got, I think, across the 23 is reserve tight head. Because I don't think Merkler's great at scrum time. But when Nepo Lalala, who must have, what, 50 caps for the All Blacks, when he comes
Yeah,
back,
he hasn't been great though this year.
but it's an international tight head
It is an
rather than a,
international
well,
tight head.
Merkler is an international tight head,
Spanish,
but Spain is slightly different to New Zealand, yeah.
yeah, it is.
But
But I
other than that, I
mean,
think it's flawless. It's a flawless match day 23. I just cannot
it is
see. The only
flawless.
issue that you've got is you've perhaps got a few guys like playing out of position because there's just so many options.
But yeah, possibly. I mean, it's great problems to have, isn't it? But when you take off Blair Kinghorn and bring on Thomas Ramos, or remove Mayafu for Flamont. Probably the best one actually is Malvaca for Marchand, isn't it? Which is just not on. Yeah, when you compare that to Harvey Skinner for Will Haden-Wood, it doesn't quite have the same ring. I think, you know,
I
to
can't
lose.
remember if it made it into last week's podcast or not, whether it was edited out, but I think in Toulouse, I said that Toulouse's match day 23 would have five players that you could quite comfortably say would be a better fly half option than Harvey Skinner. And that's not even a close debate, is it? Like, who would you rather have at
No.
10? Dupont or Harvey Skinner? Entomac or Harvey Skinner?
Yeah, it's a
Kinghorn or
tough.
Harvey Skinner? Malia or Harvey Skinner? Ramos or Harvey Skinner? You know, it's
Poor old Harvey Skinner. And he got
big
flattened
berries.
by Jack Willis, didn't he, as well? Yeah, it was a tough day for them. Toulouse were just, I think you always knew they were going to run away with it at some point. I think that the accuracy was frightening in terms of basically every offload stuck.
Which
Some of the
wasn't the
running
case for
lines,
Bordeaux.
well,
That was probably
quiet.
the difference.
It really was. And you know, they'll have sterner tests than Exeter in that second half. I think, you know, we're not really here to talk too much about Exeter. I ramble on about them enough. I think they'll actually maybe be, for all the sort of learnings and that taken it, I think there'll be a couple of elements they'll be a bit disappointed by. I think that they actually, the blitz worked okay. They properly fell off tackles in the second half, but just couldn't, you know, they got to the man and just that, you know, Arki or Kostsu or Costes, who looked unbelievably good as the sort of
He
rookie
looks
in the side.
like a good Rolls-Royce
Oh,
13, doesn't he?
well, yeah, but he was also like, he was physical, he was aggressive, he was. Yeah, he was class, given he's probably the most unheralded of that back line. They just kept wriggling
They've tied him
free.
into a 6-year contract. That was
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
very much like publicized on their social media. And I hadn't heard of him at the point of that, really. And I was like, this guy must be pretty good.
Yeah, he looks amazing. I think he got man of the match actually. And yeah, look, they fell off tackles, and they were also a bit sloppy at the base. There was a fair bit of, or at least it seemed like there was a fair bit of not getting to rucks anywhere near quick enough, which when you've got the likes of Willis and Mayafu and and kind of spewing the ball out the side. Willis was just
phenomenal,
another level. I mean, without getting too far ahead, a potential final of Leinster to lose is, I don't know, it doesn't always work that way.
It's a better final than a Harlequins Northampton final, isn't it?
Well, you say that. That could be a hell of a final. I'm going, that's the game in 2 weeks at Twickenham. I'm actually going to that, the big summer
kickoff
bash or whatever it's called. But yeah, to lose were, albeit against a slightly turnstile-y opposition in the second half, were so accurate, so quick. They seem, and you know, two or three weeks ago, we were talking about how they got beaten, albeit closely, by Bordeaux. They just seem to have a kind of a ceiling and a level they can get to when it clicks, which is beyond anything else, I think, probably currently in club rugby worldwide. So, yeah, and it was quite amazing to watch. The only thing I will say is that Exeter go 19-17 up early in the second half, and Ross Vincent gets pulled off for a phantom HIA. No one knows what's happened. The team doctor is aghast. And all of a sudden, it starts going downhill.
It's independent match day doctor, mate. It's independent.
Yeah, of course he was, yeah. He saw what my boy Ross was doing and thought, we'll get rid of him and the whole thing will collapse. And sure enough, it did. So, look, when you pull Sergio out of that lineup, it starts to fold. But no, Toulouse, absolutely amazing.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with, you know, the going forward in the league. I think that's the, which kind of takes us on nicely to probably where we're going next. Like, where can they get themselves to the positions that they need to be in terms of the barrage or the playoffs? And it's hard to see someone stopping them, but it's not unreasonable that there could be a day where it just doesn't click, or, you know, they, I think they're probably going to finish second regardless now. So it will be interesting to kind of see where they end up and kind of how the playoffs pan out. But I think, look, casting mine back a week, they look far, far, far too powerful for Racing, and that is quite scary for the rest of the league, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd think so. And I mean, I guess the nature of the sort of barrage and the playoffs and things, it affords them a little bit of space, doesn't it, if they need to rest players for the Champions Cup and things like that. But you would think a team is going to, like Bordeaux did a few weeks ago, is going to have to play pretty remarkably to get past them. But yeah, you don't know, do you? Top 14 this weekend, onto the real stuff. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think it's interesting that, because there's going to be a couple of scarred bodies, I think, in terms of Ube Bay and La Rochelle, certainly, whether I can't, La Rochelle go to Cast, and they, with the state of the play, so La Rochelle are fifth in the league, Bordeaux are sixth, Pau are in seventh, 5 points behind La Rochelle and 3 points behind Bordeaux. So neither of La Rochelle or Bordeaux can really afford a slip up. And yet they will, like, La Rochelle will really want to be in a position where they could send a weakened side out to Cast, because Cast are a pretty formidable side at home. They've had a week off. So they, well, the best players have had 2 weeks off, because they sent a pretty patchy team over to Gloucester for the last 16 game. So they'll be pretty fresh, you'd imagine. La Rochelle are going to be far from fresh. Similarly, Poe are at home to Montpellier. So you'd like to think, Montpellier, as you summarised beautifully in a voice note that never made the cut last week due to Costa Rican Wi-Fi issues, Montpellier kind of folded in their last 16 game, but their main stars will have had a bit of a rest. Are they now reset a little bit for a big onslaught at the kind of last bit, because they need it? They're 4 points off 12th, so they are currently in the access match slot with a bit of work to do. Poe away could be one where they could target, you know, classic thing with Montpellier, on paper they will have a better team than Poe, but Poa looking up, win for them, and they could be leaping ahead of La Rochelle or Bordeaux. So Poa, pretty crazy 40 points to 44 result at home against Connacht in the last 16. They've also had a weekend off. So it's an interesting dynamic of the guys that have had a little bit of a break and the ones that haven't.
Yeah, there are some really interesting ones this weekend. You say Cass, La Rochelle, that feels really important for La Rochelle. You know, who have snuck a few decent away performances in this year, haven't they? Cass, not an easy place to go.
Cast have also got to win that. Like, if Cast have had any hope of the barrage, they're done otherwise. They've got to win that. Yeah.
Similarly, Poe in episode the of what was it Montpellier Rugby Club called the Siminzico.
Siminzico,
which is one of the more egregious linguistic terms I've heard.
Of a pun,
good effort. Yeah, there's some really interesting ones in there. You'd imagine Toulouse might. I mean, how are they going to go to?
Well, I think that's interesting about when I. Yeah, I mean, it's in Marseille. Toulon, while you were in Costa Rica, Rich, kind of became the Toulon that we should have been seeing all along. The clipboard had some blank tables on it. I did notice in the Chiefs Toulouse game.
Yes, the clipboard
just before
came
half
out.
Time, there was a couple of Chiefs guys on the bench with a pencil writing on a clipboard.
Well,
and I wondered, are they going for the Pierre Mignoni approach? Or, as is well documented with this Chiefs side, were they possibly, you know, getting a bit of extra university revision in there because they're basically all university students?
Yeah, apparently it's a little kind of team thing where they try and get a couple of the playing staff who aren't playing to have their sort of analytical thoughts.
I see you doing something like that, yeah.
What would have been great is if they'd just gone full Mignoni.
Full Mignoni, yeah.
Like arms folded, chewing gum, and it just said Allais in massive like Sharpie across it. But maybe next time we'll keep
also
an eye
the other that. It's another French touchlineism that was in the previous Chiefs game. We saw a bit of Finn Russell giving it just the showing three fingers for when you want someone to go for the 3 points, which is a very French director of rugby thing of just no words, looking angry, just holding three fingers in the air. But I think, in all seriousness, with the barrage, so Toulon are in fourth now, and they have put together their last two games. They've put together some fearsome performances. They feel to me a much more powerful side than Racing 92, for example.
Yeah,
is it too outlandish to say a fully firing Toulon team like we've seen more recently, is that a side that could trip up in when it comes to the knockouts, could trip up a Toulouse because they've got the power? If Toulouse happen to be taking them a little bit lightly because they've got their eye on something bigger the following week, that is possibly the team that could do it. But as you say, I think this weekend it'll be interesting to see what Toulouse team goes to Marseille for that big showpiece game.
Yeah, and there's the thing, isn't there?
Toulon have had 2 weeks off.
Yeah, and you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but sort of hitting your straps at the business end of the season, and it is the time to do it. And if you were to lose, and not just because they're playing on this weekend, but if you were to lose or a Bordeaux, Toulon scream the sort of side like you don't want to be playing in that end of season mix. Talking of end of season mix, what else we got? We've got Stade Francais, Bayonne. Bayonne haven't won away from home all season, top of the league. That I think it's not unfair to say that's going to be pretty one-sided. Oyonnax,
it'll be a very Racing. It'll be a classic Stade Francais home win of like 28-10 or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Oyonnax feel, I mean, they're, I think they, well, they're gone, aren't they? But Racing have been, looks really patchy in points of late. You don't know, you never know, the Parisians going into the Alps or maybe a bit further north of the Alps, but certainly into that sort of mountainous Netherland at the in Oyonnax. You never know. But the one that is quite interesting is Perpignan Lyon.
Leon, yeah. Perpignan a couple of weeks off. Well, Leon have effectively had 2 weeks off because no one went to South Africa, so.
Perpignan have been sort of, well, if not flying, they've certainly been making progress in recent weeks, haven't
They're
they?
5 points behind Bordeaux. It's
Yeah, it's
can't. It's
tight in
crazy.
there. A team
That
that,
is,
I mean,
and
will
with a good home
obviously,
record, and Leon are dreadful away, so Perpignan should win that. So it'd be
I think
interesting
so.
where, with the other results, where that, likely win puts them going into the kind of final five games. It could be really interesting.
We'll obviously at some point later in the week put up our predictions across the myriad social media platforms that you'll undoubtedly be following Rosbif Rugby on. But a team we like talking about Bayonne. I can see your Bayonne hat. I was really disappointed, as I'm sure you heard, in their result in San Sebastian a couple of weeks ago. There, you would think they're going to lose at Stade Français this weekend. They are in a little bit of a slide, aren't they? Because they only just got past. They beat La Rochelle by 1 point at home, and
In a game they had no right to win.
their next home game, albeit the Jean d'Auger is a fortress, is against Bordeaux, who can't afford too many slip ups and are now out of Europe and obviously have the firepower on their day.
And could well have
If,
Jalibert back.
and could have Jalibert back, Penaud back, if. They are probably the side for me more than any. If they end up in that access match, you would be worried as a Bayonne fan, I think, above
Because they
any of
can't
the
win
others,
away.
because they just don't win away.
Yeah.
And they're not a million miles off. So yeah, what do you, I mean, how do you see it?
Well,
I know
they're
you're,
5 points ahead of Montpellier. I think it's interesting to see because Clermont were really on the slide, but they've had a couple of good wins in the Challenge Cup. They're suddenly looking at a Challenge Cup semi-final. And we kind of predicted, I think in your absence, Rich, that perhaps they would use the Challenge Cup to reset and kind of find a bit of continuity and sort out some combinations. Looks like they'd maybe done that. Christophe Aurier's going to do a wine talk a couple of days out
That
before the game.
was beautiful.
Looks like it worked some wonders because it helped them put 50 points on Ulster. But depends which, I don't know which Clermont side we're going to get, whether we're going to get a good team that's kind of built a bit of confidence, or are we going to see the team before that was kind of just so error-strewn. It's, I think, yeah, the trajectories are definitely not in Bayonne's favour. I think.
I'm just looking at their last three matches, though. They've got two of them at home. So they go per they're home to Perpignan, and then away to Oyonnax, and then they're at home to Castres, which feels like a pretty favourable run in the grand scheme of
Yeah.
things. So maybe they'll,
Clermont Montpellier is on the last day, by the way.
Oh, is it? That
That's
yeah, that could
interesting.
be interesting.
And Montpellier played Lyon the week before at home at Montpellier.
Oh wow. So
So
yeah, it's
there's
gonna be you I think Perpignan are gonna be out of it. I think that access match is gonna be a proper big money side, isn't it? And it'll be fascinating to see what happens. Anything else to preview? I say we'll follow up with our predictions, but anything else before we move on to
No, I think it's a really interesting weekend because we will it could I feel like I say this every week with the top 14. It could be one that really like shakes it up. Or it could kind of I feel like every week it kind of resets again back to where it was before. But it'll be interesting to see where teams come out of this kind of break because I know it's only 2 weeks, but you could have teams kind of completely resetting and starting again, or you might kind of have teams continuing their momentum. Yeah, it's hard to read, really. Fascinating.
fascinating. Pro Leader and Petit Fours coming up next. Now, Rob, I'm gonna need you to fill me in a little bit on Pro Day Dirt. Unsurprisingly, the coverage is relatively slim in Central America. Most recent rounds, some, I mean, you talk about
Crazy results.
fascinating rounds and results. Like the table is now looking very, very spicy everywhere, basically.
Last week I got them all right, I think. No, I didn't. The only one I got wrong was Sax V, our own team.
Our boys.
I predicted all home wins for the first time this season. Argent, with their stunning home record, in predictions wise, let me down, but very happy that they let me down because that's a huge win for Sax V. It has really shaken it up over the last few weeks. It looks like Montauban could end up bottom because they've got a horror run in, and Rouen are picking up wins at home, including, crucially, and people doubted me on this one, beating top of the table Provence at
Yes,
home on
amazing
Friday
result.
night, to make it six home
By a
wins in a
point.
row by a point. It's pretty late on as well. We actually were showing it because of some sort of, I think the La Rochelle game was on beIN Sports rather than Canal Plus. So after the game of the Bodega at Bordeaux, they were showing a rerun of Rouen versus Provence. I'd love to say I was taking notes, but I was trying to look after people slash getting involved in some mosh pits to some classic French rugby songs. But it was a late win for Rouen against top of the table Provence. And it's weird that these three big teams at the top, or the three teams going well in Provence, Béziers and Vannes, they have also started to fall into the trap of losing away games. That Vannes are still the best team in terms of away form, but that's only kind of like four wins out of 12 or something like that. Don't quote me on those numbers, but it's kind of they're still only winning about a third of the games. And that is really starting to kind of shake up the table because it means none of them as a trio are pulling away from each other. When actually, if Vannes or Provence or Béziers had snuck some of those wins against some of the really weaker teams in the league, that they could have pulled away. Equally, it means the weaker teams in the leagues, the likes of Rouen, Montauban, Biarritz, Saxe V, they're picking up wins against these teams to keep them kind of looking upwards and staving off relegation. Montauban is the interesting one because they have Provence. No, they don't. They have Vannes at home this weekend. And that's kind of a classic. That's kind of like what I'm talking about, where you've got a team that's struggling and a team that's in theory flying, but they could still trip up with that away trip. So it'll be fascinating to see how that ends up. I think the other interesting team that's interesting, or the other team that's really interesting to me, is Grenoble,
Yeah.
who are looking, are they are picking up away wins. So I think they are like now after last week. So they hammered Aurillac, and I kind of predicted that was going to be quite comfortable for Grenoble, but that's a real hammering. And I wonder if they can get an away win at Biarritz,
Yeah.
which, a weaker side, but Grenoble are picking up away wins and they're hitting some really good form and they are kind of looking upwards. They could be the ones to challenge that. Well, they could get into fourth or fifth. They could even, no, I think third's a bit beyond them, but they could get a kind of home barrage match. And then they've got enough strength there to really push the other teams above them. And that would be a hell of an effort given they had 8 point deduction. But they could be certainly the teams outside those top three. Grenoble seem like the one at the moment, and it changes every week, who could shake up that top three and actually get into a final for either the playoff or the access match, or one and the same. But yeah.
And then the game, which you could do a lovely little Provence double header with the Thursday to Saturday job, Provence against Mont-de-Marsan. That looks like a real beaut at 9 p.m. French time on Thursday.
Yeah, Mont-de-Marsan in fourth. They've been a little bit stuttering recently, but I think Provence's, it feels like when Provence are good, they're really good, and they have been really good at home. So I would back them to win that, but it could be a hell of a game. Mont-de-Marsan plays some great rugby as well. Some lovely centres, I think, and a few good Fijians as well, as some of the clubs do. But yeah, Provence are going all right. They've got a Jimmy Gompers playing some really good rugby as well.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot, and we'll for the avid Pro Day viewers, we'll go into a little bit more detail next week because it does look like a great round of fixtures. But there's always one bold prediction at least, and that's usually an away win. So who's your away win this weekend in Pro Day Duh?
I think the actually relatively easy away. Well, Aurillac are
Grenoble.
struggling. Yeah, I was going to say Grenoble is the easier one to call. Aurillac are really struggling at the moment. Béziers are going well, but they also haven't been great. I reckon there could even be three. I think Montauban might sneak another. They snuck a win at home against Nevers, which is crucial for them. Can they do the same against Vannes? I think they might. I would say Béziers should beat Aurillac, and I would say Grenoble could really put in a showing against Biarritz. But it's a long old way to go, Biarritz to Grenoble and Béziers to Aurillac, so who knows?
We won't go into too much detail because we'll maybe do it next week. There aren't any national games, but this weekend, but the weekend after next, there's the final round of regular matches in national.
Yeah.
And what I think it will mean is that anyone who's travelling from the UK to Toulouse to watch Harlequins Toulouse, if the fixtures fall as they did last year, I think there will be one at least reachable national game within reach of Toulouse, because you've got in the top four, you've got Stade Niçoise, Albi, Narbonne and Carcassonne.
Yeah.
And I don't think that top four can be breached. So there will be at least one of those places. Narbonne's maybe a little bit further away, isn't it? But Carcassonne and Albi are both very
Pretty
reachable
close to Carcassonne, yeah.
Toulouse. That if the fixtures fall as they did last year, which is that the kind of initial home quarter final
Yeah, the first
for
weekend of May,
National will
yeah.
be in the first weekend of May, following the final round of the regular season. So yeah, we'll go into that in a bit more detail next week, because it's actually looking pretty fascinating at the top there.
Yeah, it's pretty tight, and they're all, as you say, a couple of rivals there in Narbonne and Carcassonne who have traded victories against each other over the last 2 weeks. So,
Big clubs as well. Whichever of
yeah.
those comes up into Pro Day one or two with the new access match is, yeah, I think it's a really exciting time for that league. Anything else, Pro Day there, or shall we? Oh, I've actually got one more thing. I think I retweeted it on our on it, or re I re-X'd it, and Francisco Isaac, who's a Portuguese journalist,
Yeah.
has just today released an article on Rugby Pass about the joys and of Pro Day Dur, and it being the sort of shop window for some of these players, talking about the likes of Storti, Nicholas Martins, and plenty of others. Yeah, really brilliant article. So give it a read if you get a chance. Petit Fours to finish off, coming next. As someone who's been partaking in multiple petit fours and digestifs over the past few days, Rob, anything from your side? I've got a couple of little call outs.
I did have something, but I've forgotten what it was. But I think Biarritz have been bought. There are three former players fronting it, so I assume
Yes.
they chipped in 33 cents each, or one of them maybe pushed the boat out and put in that vital extra cent to round it up to a euro. But we're also looking at kind of 7 million euros of debt that they're going to have to sort out. But it looks like that is getting resolved, which is good for a very, very proud old club.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be, yeah. I mean, they've struggled this year, haven't they? It would be really sad to see them go to the wall. You hope that's a turning point. Yeah, brilliant. Well, yeah, brilliant, brilliant little ground. I say little ground, massive ground. Not many people in it when we went.
Yeah, it was
Fantastic
freezing.
use. It was freezing. Fantastic use of the same font and color everywhere in the ground. So all the advertising boards, no matter the business, with the exception of one massive sign for the dating app Grindr, were all in the same sort of Biarritz Olympique font, whatever that might be.
It's the kind of
Just
faded red and white. So even
faded
like
red.
Ford, which we know as blue and white, international global brand, was
Not
kind
in
of had
Biarritz,
their,
it isn't.
yeah, that's actually universal across. So we noticed it in Bayonne, and we noticed it in recently I noticed it in Toulouse, and also at the
Ah,
Toulouse football ground, all the sponsors were in purple.
purple. Ah,
So
interesting. I
Quins
thought.
fans will see that when they go for the semi-final.
There you go. There was something about it at the Biarritz, at the Aguilera, that looked particularly cool, though, I thought. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because the first time I noticed it.
Yeah.
But shout out, to the Ropi consortium that has bought up Biarritz for a quid. Sounds like the sort of thing we might have tried to do had we known when we were there. So
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I think we would have been good for the 1 euro. I'm not too sure about the
Yeah,
7 million.
that's
Rosbees
true.
has not quite started bringing in that cash yet.
But you need the face, don't you? You
We
need
can
the
only
front.
dream. Yeah.
A couple of petty faults from my side. I tried to have a look to see if Montpellier is still blocking ticket sales for their game against Perpignan. You need some sort of special code. I can't work it out. So I think the answer to that is yes. I haven't done much further investigation because that looked like a proper excellent diplomatic incident a couple of weeks ago when I first saw it. I suppose the other petty fours from my side, a couple of transfer confirmations, obviously centered on Montpellier. A couple of people we've mentioned today. Madosh Tambwe is off to
Yes,
Montpellier.
that's a shame, isn't it?
He is really good.
He's rapid and he's
He is
dynamite,
so
yeah.
fast. When people say this guy is electric, he is. I'm sure his career will go from strength to strength at Montpellier. Another signing for Montpellier is someone who impressed massively in the World Cup is Nicolas Martins has
Is
signed for
he?
Montpellier. Yeah, from our
Oh
beloved
no.
Saxe V. He's moving up in the
It was
world.
a bit of a one-man team at points for Saxe V this season. So
Yeah,
yeah, that doesn't
he's
bode well for
off.
next year.
He's off. And then the last thing from me is sort of slightly somber note, but also a nice one in a few ways. So Rugbyrama and I think it's a Welsh French rugby journalist, Iltyd Dafydd,
Yeah.
if I pronounced it, highlighted earlier. So today it was the funeral of André Boniface, who was the great French and Stade Montois winger. Died last week, I think it was, at the age of
Couple of
he's I
yeah, it
think
was a
he'd
week or
think
so
he
before.
was 80 odd,
So
90.
they had a minute's
They did.
applause for him at the Bordeaux game, and then I saw that they had it at the
They
Toulouse
did
game
at
as well.
Toulouse as well. But they had some footage from the funeral. I mean, I don't know why it's not funny, but I thought it was just very, very cool. Was the four pallbearers are all, I think, officials of Stade Montois currently, and they were all wearing the long sleeved, iconic yellow and black old
Yeah.
school rugby shirts, and it just looked wicked. And from everything I've been reading, we're talking proper legend.
The
Was
picture they
part.
had on the screen during the minute's applause was that kind of old school kind of my first rugby jersey,
They're
black
so
and yellow
cool.
striped. Yeah, it's really cool.
I can't remember who it was, but a couple of years ago, one of the big NBA players was seen courtside with a Mon de Marsan retro
Oh,
rugby shirt on.
niche.
I'll try and find it. It's absolutely phenomenal. But I was having a little bit of a look at him. He was part of the Mon de Marsan team that. The only Mon de Marsan team that won the French championship, I think, in 1963. His brother Guy Boniface was very sadly killed in a car crash on his
Oh,
way
God.
back from a game 60 years ago. And Mont-de-Marsan
Wow.
Stadium is called the Stade Guy Boniface.
Ah, yes.
I knew I recognized the name from somewhere, and I was just having another look at it, and I can't find an announcement, and I don't know if somebody is just playing around, but on Wikipedia, the Stade Guy Boniface is now listed as the Stade André A. Guy Boniface. So whether
Wow.
that is true, I'm not sure, but clearly an absolute legend. Looked like a cracking send off, and a ground that will, yeah, we must get to at some point. Looks like a wicked place to
Is
watch rugby.
if you've been delving into the Boniface family, do you know if Ugo Boniface, the replacement loosehead for Bordeaux at the weekend, former Bayonne man, is he related? Because Bayonne is not miles away from Mont-de-Marsan.
No, I don't know, but I did see actually that it was André passed in Bayonne, so I don't know if that is coincidental or not. Ugo Boniface with one of the more outrageous that try, the Deportivo on
Yeah.
an otherwise bleak day. The offload and the pickup is
If he is
absolute
related,
magic.
maybe a fitting tribute to his
Absolutely.
flair forebears.
Yeah, quite. I think that's everything. Any more from
Yeah, I
yourself,
think
Robert?
I just want to finish with a slight apology to anyone that we've recommended Club Esperanza to, because we went there last April when we were in Bordeaux for the La Rochelle v Chiefs semi-final, and Club Esperanza was pumping. I can confirm on Friday night it was less pumping. But I'm now signed up again as a member. And actually a nice little turn of phrase that we learned in Club Esperanza, as well as getting some recommendations, which we weren't sure whether for bars or other establishments. Because we were trying to explain what stag do, or the fact that it's stag, and it's the enterrement de vie de garçon, so basically the funeral of your life as a boy, which I think is a much better turn of phrase than stag do. But I thought that was kind of the I kind of thought when we were before there's one of the other guys spoke pretty good French, much better French than me, and I was like, I bet it's like that sort of thing where they there's like a really nice turn of phrase that is kind of semi-logical. So yeah, enterrement de vie de garçon is your kind of stag do in France, which is a funeral for your life as a boy.
Excellent. And on that slightly morbid but semi-uplifting note at the end, I've been Richard, that has been Rob. We have been Ros Biff's. Au revoir.
Au revoir.